This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Match Report. I'm Chris Hambling, and in this episode we look back at a week which ended with the fans back at Selhurst and a fittingly strong performance in a 1-1 draw with table-topping Spurs. Harry Kane beat an inspired Guaita with a cruelly late swerving strike before a dominant Palace secured a point through Jeff Schlupp as a jubilant 2,000 supporters lost their minds.
Back of the Nest Review Show, sponsored by Pitch Sport, available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Okay, with me today is a reduced panel, but not in quality, just in quantity, and it's Mr. Mike Scott. Hello, Mike.
Oh, I was about to make that joke.
Sorry, that's what happens when we don't fully prepare and just start recording, isn't it?
I'm not sure I lost my mind yesterday. I've got to say, it was amazing, but I kept my mind and I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Well, I'm not going to give too much away, but I suspect your nerves were calmed by some smuggled goods. That's all I'm going to say on the matter. But there we go. Yes, that's right. Don't need to edit that out, do we? Do we? That's fine. Yeah, no one's gonna know what I mean. It was nothing illegal, just to be 100% clear. So we are going to go straight into the news from the week. But just before we do, I just want to quickly point out and catch up with Mike on the fact that we were both extremely fortunate to be at the game, to be one of the 2,000. Well, two of the 2,000. So my voice is a little bit lower. It's recovered slightly from this morning when I sounded very, very Barry White. But still a little bit of a croak in the throat. And it's so pleasing to wake up with a croak in the throat from screaming abuse at Kevin Friend because he's such a biased, useless, incompetent referee. Mike, how did you feel this morning?
Well, my voice couldn't get much lower at the best of times. But myself and a couple of people were on the waiting list as well and by magic got seats, but it was right up in the sticks in the upper tier, so shouting was fine, but not to the point where Kevin Friend could hear. So I used the seat next to me, which you don't usually get to do very often, and use that as a big old loud drum. So
nice.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll be talking much more about that in just a moment, but time for us to delve straight into the news from the week. And unfortunately, we're going to have an edit point here, Mike, because it just says update with a question there, and I don't really know the answer to that question.
Well, we'll try and find this out next week, but the Palace Christmas appeal, I know that the HF guys were delivering presents last week. I can't see that they didn't. So the money has gone to... The money for presents has gone to the Salvation Army. And I think when I checked earlier today, it was the best part of $2,500. People are still donating. So I'm sure they'll carry on giving the money over. But if you haven't yet, I think 120 people or something have. There's still time.
A fantastic sum of money raised. And, you know, obviously an incredibly worthy cause and a great piece of work by everybody who's organised that. And I know it's not the only charity appeal going on from supporters at the moment. And I'll try and bring you some news on that one as well next week, as I haven't done my prep. Work's difficult at the moment, isn't it? Work, yeah. Anyway, so the second question from the news, of course, Mike, is did Martin Kelly do okay in the chess?
Yeah, I feel like we probably should have left this out of the document, being as I'm assuming neither of us know. But he definitely did play that chess game, because Hesketh and Terence were showing screen grabs of the game, which looked enthralling from those particular static screen grabs.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to talk about. I didn't follow it, but I did follow Hesketh and Terence and the brief discussion in the preview show. So check that out if you haven't listened to it already. But I think the general consensus was, and Patrick O'Connor is, of course, a chess master himself, and I think the consensus was he was better than anybody thought he would be, because it's quite a strange thought to have had that Martin Kelly would be a chess player, isn't it? But I suppose that's a little bit of bias in there, not expecting a footballer to have other interests. But apparently, according to Patrick, the biggest mistake he made was not knowing to castle as early as possible. So there you go. And that is not only a comment on Martin Kelly's chess behaviour, it is a tip for you, you chess players at home. Castle as early as you can, apparently. Been a long while since I played chess, anyway. So Palace got involved with the Rainbow Laces event again. So speaking to Sky Sports, Gary Cahill said that the campaign is hugely important for us as players and football clubs, because we have the platform we do. You can influence people in the right way and send good messages. I think it's important that we do, because people listen, stand up and take note of what players do or say. If we can impact in a positive way, that's fantastic. And I mean, it sounds like an obvious thing to say, but it's such a worthy campaign. It's been going for quite a while now. And I know Sky did some really good coverage of it. In fact, one of our social media buds, Katie Murray, was interviewed on behalf of Proud and my words are bad. Proud and Palace. There you go.
Not Proud and Palace. That's new shit.
Oh, Jesus. A very different organisation, which I can state categorically is not headed up by the former Palace forward. That is unacceptable. We may have to take that out. That is, I mean, it's not libelous, I guess, but it's controversial, isn't it? It's I don't know what to, you've rocked me with that.
Yeah, well, apologies. I mean, it's good that the point that Rainbow Laces campaign is now so embedded in the Premier League season. So it was, I think it was Jimmy Mack and Cahill that held up a banner before the game. It's just good. I mean, I know it's toeing the line and just saying what needs to be said, but it could easily be ignored in the current circumstances, and they didn't, so that's great.
No, exactly. And, there's a lot of people arguing on various fronts about, they keep calling it politicising sport, and it really isn't. It's just about, decency, integrity, dispelling ignorance. And to me, it can only be considered a positive. Football's there for everybody in every walk of life. And society in general needs to be a bit more open than that. But huge strides being made. And I just love to see it every week. So there were no under 23 games this week, Mike, but there was an FA Youth Cup match, which I watched in full on YouTube. I tell you what, harsh lessons for a very, very talented Palace side, because that under 18 side has been doing fantastically, other than a little blip against Spurs where they lost 5-1. But other than that, an absolutely storming performance in the Premier Development League. But having said that, they turned up to play Fleetwood. And I have to say, you could almost feel that the Palace side know how good they are. And they turned up knowing that they were playing lesser opposition. And they were totally out for. I don't know if you managed to catch any of it, Mike. But
no, I didn't. I did see that they were behind twice. It's a shame. It's a real shame.
Yeah, there was a few ex-Cat 1 players in the Fleetwood side, which again might have gone amiss for some of those young players to think that actually maybe some of the guys that they were coming up against have actually come from a higher level than they were last year. But what really told was the physicality of Fleetwood. They did not let up for a second. They ran all game. We had no possession for any length of time. Mooney's a terrific prospect for Palace, but after a really strong opening 5 or 10 minutes, they just cut the supply off to him and just harried us. And ultimately, it was watching a team learn a very, very harsh lesson. But having said that, that's the time to learn that lesson when you're playing in a very talented under 18 side and you're feeling, confident and you're beating all comers despite, being new to that level. It's not bad to get your feet sort of put firmly back on the ground every now and then. And that will make them stronger as players. I'm sure of that. Mike, you've added the Lewis versus Palace women's result there. 2-0 Palace.
Yeah, I mean, I just got to have another moment. I know that the games are set for 2 o'clock on a Sunday, but if the men's team is playing at the same time, I really do not understand how they can't change the time of the games. It's a massive waste. It must be so demoralising for the sides, because usually down at the Dripping Pan, those games are well attended, but the only people that would have gone are the ones that couldn't get tickets for the men's game. Obviously, that's plenty of people and they played on that, but there's absolutely no... That could have been streamed later in the day or earlier in the day. It just seems stupid. Anyway, Palace won 2-0 after what was apparently a fairly dull goalless first half. So Bianca Baptiste scored two. The first one, I think, probably set Palace going by the looks of it from the highlights. A long old route one ball that she got on the end of and seemed to catch Lewis unawares. So Palace now, they're up to seventh. Lewis are the team above them, actually, and they're doing well, like six points now above bottom place Charlton, so looking strong enough.
Good to see them getting some good results. And so finally, before we end your news for the week, do remember, of course, to check us out on all socials by searching for Back of the Nest. Like and subscribe on YouTube as well for loads more content. DR once again doing a watch along, was on his own for quite a while because Patrick had some system issues and my signal from Selhurst was inconsistent as I joined him every now and then. Having watched it back, quite a lot of background noise on my first appearance on that. But do stick with it. Some really interesting insight as they do the watch alongs. And sadly, with London going into tier three, it looks like I'll be back on those watching from home in the not too distant future. As I say, like and subscribe. Tons and tons of content on there. It's well worth your while. So our first topic, and we can't really start anywhere else, can we, Mike, in the fact that the fans were back at Selhurst. As I said, we were fortunate enough and really genuinely feel hugely privileged to have been two of the 2,000. I want to talk, first of all, before we get into the comments, just about some personal experiences of the day in general. I mean, first and foremost, the noise was incredible for 2,000 fans. And quite rightly, as we'll probably pick up later on, the didn't go amiss looking through social media and looking at neutral fans' comments and you know, how they felt. And in particular, lots of angry Arsenal fans asking why the 2,000 at the Emirates couldn't make any noise. Well, let's face it, a full Emirates doesn't make any noise, so they shouldn't really be surprised there. But for me, I just thought, you know, I was so excited for the game. It's the earliest I think I've ever turned up for kickoff. I was over 90 minutes early for my entry time on my ticket, and I had to just sit in my car like a little overexcited child, messing around on social media. And it just did not disappoint. In fact, it was everything, and I thought it would be, and more. I didn't realise how much I'd missed the place. The day was managed brilliantly by Palace. I think, you know, there was no excessive queuing. You were able to get away from any areas where people were congregating pretty easily. Majority of people respecting the mask rules, although obviously there were some people who weren't, and they may have had reasons why not. And there was also a little bit too much congregating for me to be fully safe, but I had enough space and opportunity to sort of manage my own risk on the day. So that was really, really pleasing, I have to say. I just missed so much about it, and I could talk forever, but Mike, I've got to let you speak as well. But can I just mention the moment at the start of the game where we'd got the glad all over out of the way and we still can't clap in time to it. And that made me really happy. But most importantly, I think the moment where we sang, "Can you hear the Tottenham sing?" That just, yeah, it just reminded me. I know it's a simple joke, and I know it's, but it's just, you get so much of that in a match day from the crowd, and it just made me smile. And I don't think I stopped smiling for the whole game, even when we were losing. How about yourself, Mike?
Well, I was going to bring up the enormous cheer when all of the players took the knee. That was seriously loud for 2,000 people. Yeah, I mean, I get about the congregation. So I was in the Upper Holmesdale, and there was very little congregation. There was an enormous amount of space. I've mentioned before that I went to the cricket with 2,000 people, and this was 10 times better run. As you said, like 30-minute arrival times that were staggered for people. Had to see away a large kingfisher, and then was put a tisky underneath my nose before I and told I had like 2 minutes to finish it. So that was nice. I thought they handled it really well. People were respectful. I don't think I saw anyone without a mask on, actually, up in the upper. The seats were, you know, there was a nice lot of space between people. I don't think they could have done anything better. I know that Lampard came out yesterday or today and said that he hopes that even in Tier 3, football will be given a carte blanche to carry on. I can't see that happening, to be honest with you. So it could be that we have ended up seeing the only game for months and months and months. So we're incredibly lucky. And I will say, I know a few of us from the pod went to it, but it was totally... A fair few of us didn't get tickets straight away. We got them on the waiting list. We didn't get any preferential treatment or anything like that before.
Yeah, a few people asking who I had secrets on when I got an early waiting list ticket. But yeah, absolutely right. There was no underhandedness. I think most of us, you know, the fact that we do this pod will tell you that we're insane about following Palace, and we go to every single game. And I know people aren't really that lucky in general. So, you know, having the loyalty points we had was, again, it's extremely fortunate to be in that position, no matter which way you look at it. But I had to laugh with some of the mask stuff because it was funny, and I didn't feel at risk for it. But there were lots of people who moved the mask so they could shout, which I enjoyed. Lots of people who seemed to have masks either on the nose and not the mouth, or on the mouth and not the nose. And some general sort of confusion around it. And, you know, I have to admit, celebrating the goal, I had to end up clamping my hand over my face to keep the mask in place, because it was just, I don't think they're made for screaming wildly at how much you love Jeffrey Schlupp. So,
but a great side effect of them is that they are one of the best things I've ever had for keeping warm. So you wouldn't have been able to peel mine off me by the time it went dark.
Yeah. I hate to say it as well, but I really loved the fact that the weather was terrible, because, you know, I love terrible weather anyway, but the fact that it was freezing cold and pouring with rain, that's football day for me. Whenever the weather's that bad, I always think about football anyway. Usually, you know, a long trip up north or something like that. But the fact that, you know, the first and, you know, potentially only game for a while back at Selhurst was just absolutely horrendous, just made it all the more special for me. So... but it sounds like we're gloating, so I think we will move on to some comments for the time being, other than for me to also acknowledge the amazingness of the noise when the players took the knee. And that just goes to show you the difference between ourselves and our Bermondsey neighbours. I think we just wanted to make sure that people understood what sort of club Crystal Palace is, which was nice. So a few comments that you've kindly popped in the document for me. Mike, the first one being from Anfield Effect.
I'm not sure I want all of these to have the oxygen of publicity, but they get the point across.
No, but obviously they're talking about the fact that that might be no fans for the game where we play Liverpool next at home, suggesting that we might be in Tier 3, so there might be no fans, but pointing out that we carried the team against Spurs. And I do think that that's an interesting point of discussion that lots of people have highlighted about. Was the Palace performance that good because of the fans? And it's hard to know, isn't it? Because it was such a strong display. But we had a bit of confidence from the West Brom game, and how much the players playing well, even in the first half, inspired the fans, and how much the fans inspired the players, I don't know. But I think there's very little doubt that the pressure that built in the second half before we scored was made all the more intense by just how much the fans were desperately screaming that ball to get into the back of the net. So interesting observation there. Llewellyn Dixon, as we sort of hinted at earlier on, talking about watching on TV and saying the atmosphere at Palace with 2,000 people far exceeded the Emirates.
and they're talking about they don't know what's wrong with their own fans. Well, I've got a long list if you want that as well. Mike, do you want to take us through Nathaniel Clyne's comments?
Yeah, I do just want to say, actually, I watched back Match of Day 2 before we've done this pod, and I don't really think that the TV volume especially did a lot of it justice. So if people are saying that, then, well, it must have been really quiet at the Emirates. So, yeah, Nathaniel Clyne, they stuck it up on cpfc.co.uk. Fairly generic comment, but it's great to have the fans back supporting us like the 12th man. Even though there were only a few of them here today, it was great to have them here, and hopefully it continues. I mean, Clyne got an enormous reception, second only to Eze, who just got a standing ovation from the people that weren't already standing for the game anyway. Those two got serious props, so I'm not surprised he was fairly happy with that.
Absolutely right. And yeah, he's just, as we say, almost every week, he's getting better every week. So yes, it's just an astonishing performance from Clyne. Looks very much back to his best at the moment. So there was, you know, there was a bit of negativity on socials as well about the Palace fans, which I'll be honest, I thoroughly enjoyed. I like the fact that there was people hating on Palace and calling us embarrassing and all this sort of stuff. You know, if you want to talk about being embarrassing, I think sitting there in silence is embarrassing, and going out enjoying the day, and lots of people wearing colours as well. And, you know, someone was sticking the boot in for the, you know, the Palace face mask. Well, what are you going to do? you know, we love our club. We're celebrating loving our club. That's all it's about. So I enjoyed that. I feed off of that negative energy because it means we're doing something right. But I also picked out Jeff McQuiggan just a tweet I found by searching the words Crystal Palace fans on Twitter repeatedly. And enjoying the tweets. And it's just a general comment on all football matches at the moment. And he said, based on what I've seen of the atmosphere created by limited crowd sizes in matches, we should let 2,000 Crystal Palace fans into every match, which I enjoyed. That is high praise indeed from Jeff. So I not too much more, I guess, to really touch on in terms of the fans being back, other than the fact that I will say, finally, if you do get that opportunity, even if it's joining a waiting list or whatever it is, and you've got any kind of concerns about going, just to emphasise, it was extremely well managed. You have the opportunity to, you know, to take your safety into your own hands and do the right things as well. And don't miss out, because it was worth it. It was worth every moment. And you know, to be a bit serious, if I can, mental health wise, you know, we're all struggling at different times throughout this pandemic. It's been really tough on all of us. And some people, I don't think, realize just how tough it's been on them. And when you actually go out and you get something that's just that little bit close to normality, it's had such an effect on me personally. You know, I've woken up this morning, I'm ridiculously happy. I'm still buzzing now from it. So just anything that you can do to get some semblance of normality in your life, I hugely encourage you to do. And all the more better if that is being able to go and support Palace at Selhurst in the not too distant future. So let's talk more about the game specifically. And Mike, you've picked up a great tweet for us to start with.
Yeah, so from One More Point fanzine, who is definitely always entertaining. So he said, with the Palace game being a draw, does this mess up people's rhythm in the Roy in, Roy out, hokey cokey? Spurs were supposed to be an out, West Ham an in. I've now lost my place in the dance. Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, you know what he's saying. It's a lighthearted way of basically asking what the hell is up. I mean, we still don't understand our team from one week to the next. But it was... it was a great game. I think if we'd have come away 1-0, it would still have been great to have gone. But just the way that the team now in consecutive games has shown the kind of grit that was totally not there before that. I'm at a loss what's going on, to be honest.
So yeah, talking about the Roy in, Roy out discussion. You know, I still have my concerns over Roy, particularly when you talk about whether or not he's the man for Palace any further than, you know, even this season, really. But I'm pleased. I'm always happy when Roy kind of sticks it to me, if you like, and gets a performance out of the team and starts, you know, producing. We start producing something on the pitch that makes sense to me. You know, that kind of intensity that we played with that's been missing so much, the pace, the directness, the passion that, you know, the team are always giving their all, but they don't always seem to be structured in a way that kind of enables the freedom we need up front. And the changes that Roy's made in the last two games in particular, and mainly, let's face it, in bringing in Christian Benteke, who has led the line perfectly with players in and around him. We talked about it loads last week. You know, it's been talked about in all the watch-alongs, but it was so apparent in this game as well. Benteke didn't score, but he had an absolutely sensational game. And it's not just about how well he's playing. It's about the fact that there's a front four now, not a front three. That's clearly what we've been trying to do. And we just haven't always got it right. It's either been the personnel or it's been the kind of mental approach to the game, starting on the back foot, being too deep and too many gaps between the front players and all that kind of stuff. That's what we've been seeing. And that's what's made me absolutely livid with the situation in the past. But right now, what we're seeing is a team that was, understandably, I guess, beat a 10-man West Brom, but played a top-of-the-league side and absolutely took it to them. And if you're talking about who really deserved, on the balance of play, who deserved to win that game, the only team you could come to the conclusion who would have deserved to win if it wasn't a draw is Palace, in my view. And I don't think I'm being biased with that, because I already have, you know, fairly negative opinions about the manager and you know, the way we've played. So I've been turned around by that to some degree. So the hokey cokey is real in that sense. But Mike, I'll just get your thoughts, really. I mean, obviously, I've picked out Benteke making the big difference, but looking at Schlupp playing wide right and Eze playing left, and you know, Roy's been really specific about them not being wingers, and he's absolutely right. It gives him that compact shape that he loves. But how have they been able to, so you know, to better interact with that front two?
Well, I just got to say, first of all, that Jermaine Genas agrees with you, so that's high praise. I love Angels Townsend. I put him in my all-time favourite Palace 11. But it's clear to get the best of Benteke, as he has been in the last couple of games, you need somebody with the pace and the eye for a run that Schlupp has without the ball. Andros is a genius with the ball, but with Benteke holding it up, you've got triangles being made with Zahar and Eze. You've got triangles being made with Schlupp and Eze, and any combination of those four. So it's working well, and whether Hodgson meant it or not, it's clicked between those two. So when people say about Benteke, for me, it's Benteke and Schlupp together as a single entity, if that makes sense.
I could tell you've been standing near Chris Clark a little bit too long. You know, a lot of love for Jeffrey Schlupp there. Weirdly enough, I have to say this, I've got so much time for him, as you know, as a wide player. I actually thought he was probably, I wouldn't call him a weak link because everyone played well. But I would say he was having a game where not a lot was coming off for him. You know, he won a few fouls here and there, doing some great defensive work as well, running direct, trying to get beyond as much as he could, linking the play out relatively well. But not a lot came off for him until the goal. But then seeing him celebrate the way he did, you know, all my concerns just melted away, because that's one thing you do get with him. You know, he does score goals, not bucket loads, but he knows how to put the ball in the net, and anticipation there was great.
He was in the positions that I don't think we currently have another player that gets into those positions. Obviously, you've got Batshuayi that would be in the position to finish something off, but to just go on a sprinting run past the man with the ball, just head down, just seeing what happens, that style of play isn't going to work a lot of the time. But when it doesn't click five times, it does click once, and that's better than just not doing it at all.
Absolutely right. And it's, you know, and when you said earlier on about, you know, the fact he's come in the team for Andros, all Andros gives you, and a lot of people, myself included, thought, you know, drop Andros at the time when Benteke's in the team. He's the only guy that crosses. It just seemed madness. But, you know, the logic is there in it, and everything that we've talked about now, which is, you know, the pace and directness that he gives you, and a bit more defensive solidity as well, because, you know, obviously he's played a lot of Premier League games as a left back, as an out and out defender. So yeah, it's definitely given a really interesting balance, and interesting to hear Roy talk about the fact that he considers Jeffrey Schlupp to be two footed rather than than a left-footed player. Perhaps something, again, I've not really appreciated myself in the past, but as soon as he said it, I just thought back to, yeah, you know, he can hit a good shot with his right foot. Of course, he did miss a pretty good chance with his right foot.
Yeah, that one was that was a big miss. I mean, let's be honest, Hodgson is going to probably name Schlupp as his godparent for whatever kid he has with his 29-year-old next wife. So, yeah.
There's a lot that went on in that explanation there. need to think that one through a little bit later on. We have to talk about a certain Spanish goalkeeper, Vicente Guaita. In a lot of ways, quite a peculiar game because of that, the one incident with the goal. So let's start with the goal, first of all, because he got a bit of a hammering. I've watched the full match back on Sky, including the pre- and post-match coverage. And he got an absolute hammering off of Souness because he was saying, I don't know what he's complaining about. It's swerving. He's right behind it, seeing it the whole way. I mean, that's first of all, Graeme Souness watching the ball in slow motion is a bit of a different thing. But it's just the technique on the shot. You can see it. It's not necessarily a new technique. It's something that's been happening for years. I can remember when I was a kid and I used to obsessively read all sorts of football books. It was something I think it was Mervyn Day talking. He was an old Leeds goalkeeper. And he was talking about facing Brazilian players and how they had this knack of making the ball start to swerve one way and swerve back the other. And you can see that's exactly what Guaita's looking at. He's looking at the strike. He's seen the fact that it's starting to move in the air. But the direction of the ball suggests that it's going to move to his right, to the left as you look at it. But it really does sort of swerve and dip. And you don't appreciate it from the angle of the camera looking directly on it. Because, you know, Guaita's at a completely different angle looking at it in a very, very different way. And he's not a rubbish goalkeeper, is he, as he proved? So it's quite clearly been a much more of a deviation than people really have given it credit for. But for you, Mike, does it go down as an error?
Yeah, not sure I agree with Souness there. He didn't dwell on it. Guaita did not dwell on that being a mistake. He quickly said, you know, it fooled me, but he wasn't moaning. He wasn't blaming anything else. He wasn't saying he was unsighted. And he just got on with it and made some excellent saves afterwards. So for me, whether it was a mistake or not, it doesn't really matter. That we've had other goalkeepers in the past that once they've done that, you know, they're going to be a gibbering wreck the rest of the game. And the fact that he became man of the match, which we'll go over in a minute, is testament to the fact that he gets over his own issues, and that's an amazing trait in a goalkeeper.
Definitely, and I have to say, I don't know about you, but I was watching him afterwards because it just looks like such a lonely existence for a goalkeeper when something like that happens. Because, you know, he's basically walking around in his own penalty area, and every now and then, sort of dropping onto his dropping and crouching down, and just. He's got all he can really do is sort of look around the stadium when the ball's not up that end. And I'm really kind of like, I was almost heartbroken. And I don't know if you remember, like, when we conceded that goal, nobody kind of went, there wasn't even a groan. It was kind of because he'd already made, what, 2-3 ridiculous saves. And everyone was just kind of like, oh. And it was just this almost, oh, rather than, ah.
I mean, we've all been done by a swerving ball in any sport. So, yeah, there was nothing other than, right, let's get into it and some more Palace chanting. And really, that's what you expect from real Palace fans. You know, day shippers might moan and make excuses, but Palace fans don't do that. So,
no, you're right. Everyone got straight back on supporting the team, you know, roaring them on. And you say it paid in the end. I mean, you could pick so many excellent saves, and you know, there was a couple at least that were exceptional. I think the early one from Ndombele was absolutely superb, not just to get down to it, but to push it wide and out of danger. The reactions were just sensational. But it's, you know, there was a save from Kane from a corner that shouldn't have been given, which again was relatively close to him, but he pushed it out brilliantly. The one where he ended up sort of half tipping it onto the bar and then had to get set straight away as Kane sort of diverted the ball back across into his path. And again, got down so low so quickly. And when you first see it, you think, as he effectively just dropped onto the ball and got a little bit lucky. But it's not. The hand comes down, scoops the ball out. It, you know, it's a split second reaction, and an absolutely phenomenal save. But you can't think, you know, you can't really sum it up any more than the save from Eric Dier's free kick at the end. Watching it live, I don't know how you felt, Mike, but when you saw it live, you can't really understand how he got that high up, that far across his goal that quickly. And then having seen it back, to seen the photos of it, seen it a ridiculous number of times, I don't think I still understand how he got there.
I mean, the last, well, injury time, the 4 minutes of injury time went on for an age. And as Hodgson said, he was still quick to look for the negatives and what he can do better. And he said, you know, we gave away some stupid fouls towards the end of the game, which probably true. Yeah, it was an amazing, it was an absolutely amazing save, for, especially for a man of his height, you know, if he's 6'10" or something, maybe. But for me, the Kane header, so I think it was Aurier over to Kane to totally send the ball the opposite direction to where the cross was going. And then for him to get down to his left, I mean, I've never seen live a keeper with those kind of reflexes. It's incredible to watch.
I mean, it puts me in mind of Jules, his all time best save, most important save, most phenomenal save when he saved from Ashley Barnes against Brighton to tip it onto the bar. When, again, if you try and time the reaction speed for him to get his hand up to it and flick it onto the bar, is, you know, you couldn't stop a flipping stopwatch quick enough. You know what I mean? It's that good. But he seems to be able to pull out that kind of reaction every week. So a tremendous, tremendous goalkeeper. And it was so nice to see somebody get that kind of that retribution. I don't know if that's the right word. That kind of, yeah, to have lost that game and being focused on that one moment where he got caught out would have been so unjust given how well he played. So fitting that the kind of last moment of the game was him making an absolute world-class stop. Just talk a little bit about our equaliser. And it takes us on to one of the subjects that somebody has asked us to talk about as well. And that is Eberechi Eze putting the ball in from a dead ball. And I'll be honest with you, I don't really want to do a negative thing in this show, so I'll just quickly mention it. And that is, you know, for a couple of weeks, the two games in particular, when we lost to Burnley and Newcastle after beating Leeds, and Eze's he was just nowhere to be seen on free kicks and corners, and it just baffled me. And once again, we kind of see why that is, because his dead ball play all game was just top notch. It doesn't seem to really miss hit it. And this ball in the 81st minute, and you know, he quite rightly, when he's celebrating the goal, he stops and celebrates his free kick first and then runs and joins everybody, because it was absolutely perfect. But what I also picked out, Mike, was the runner Christian Benteke. And I did initially probably give him more credit than he deserves, loads of credit, but I probably gave him even more because I thought he's been smart enough to duck under it. But when you see it again, I think there's a good two or three defenders who've got their arms over him, holding him down. So as he runs across, he's still strong enough to run through them, but he can't get off the ground. And that's why Lloris can't react until very, very late. And then the aforementioned Schlupp is on the case straight away, smashes it home to scenes of absolute jubilation. But just a great moment and a fantastic goal.
Yeah, telling pressure, first of all, because, you know, it was all Palace at that point, absolutely all Palace, to the point where the negative bit of you goes, we're going to get caught on the counter and this is going to be 2-0. But the goal was almost like a microcosm of the fans' atmosphere at the time, like from the Holmesdale, just sort of willing the ball in, and it did just do that, really, you know, from 1 yard out, absolutely smashing it. That was just a reflection on the fans for me. Great goal. Everyone went mental as usual. I won't forget that one in a hurry, definitely.
No, very, just a really, truly special moment. And, you know, the kind of, I know what you mean about the atmosphere and the sort of intensity kind of creating the goal almost. It just, again, takes the mind back to one of the loudest nights ever at Selhurst with the Liverpool game, where you just knew we were going to get back to 3-3, because it just, you know, it was an inevitability of the intensity and the noise in the stadium. And whilst there were only 2,000 of us, there was an inevitability that the pressure was going to tell, because Tottenham didn't know what to do. They couldn't motivate themselves to get out of the funk that they were in. And the crowd was just feeding the players and the players feeding the crowd. So, as you say, not something that I'll forget for a long, long time. So before we start talking a little bit more about Eze, as requested by a listener comment, we'll get to it a bit. I know you've picked out a few statistics for us to quickly run through, Mike.
Yeah, well, the statistic I wanted to go for was based on Mourinho's comment after the game. And, you know, you don't want to get Mourinho getting under your skin, but he kind of did annoy me with this comment. I'm going to read the comment out in full and then give a few stats on it. Mourinho: it was because they were not able to do it, and he was talking about following his half-time instructions. I give credit to Palace for that. I always say that even if you want to press high, if the ball is in the air, you cannot press. There is nothing to press. So they put the ball in the air. They started putting the ball in the box and creating lateral free kicks and corners with rebounds, so the goal could arrive like it did. So he's talking about us playing long balls, hopeful balls. To me, I think this probably sums up a quote we're gonna have from Højbjerg in a minute. But you know, I feel like they slightly underestimated Palace. And if we get onto Benteke, obviously this plays to his strengths. But I don't agree with what he's saying. And I looked at the stats on whoscored.com. So, in fact, long balls during the game, we had 57 of them, and they only had 56. We only had one more than them. So I'm not sure I buy into this "we've hit it and hope," and that's what stopped them playing well in the second half. You know, that's what Burnley did against us a few weeks ago to great effect, but the stats just don't back it up. And if that was the case, we would have got them, you know, the stats would have suggested that they had a ton more attempts than us, that kind of thing. Well, we had more shots than them, 16 to 14. They had a couple more in open play. They had 9 to our 7. We had a few more set pieces. But the stats just don't back up the fact that Spurs were, you know, playing some kind of sort of higher class of football. They weren't. The positional report showed that we played equally down the left, the middle and the right, basically, whereas they sort of bottled most of their chances over to the left and did what they could down the left flank. So, if anything, I think Palace played what Match of the Day described as really attractive football. And it's not often that we get those kind of plaudits on national television. And I think Mourinho is trying to cover that up a little bit.
Well, definitely not. Well, first and foremost, this is the point I've been doing my head in about. We can play good football. We're capable of it. We have a squad that can do it. And I don't accept being bored every week. And we've shown it that we can do it. And we, you know, again, we did it against the team that currently top of the table. We showed that we can out football them at times, and that I think Terence even picked out a stat in one of our group chats as well, that in terms of key short passes, you know, so significant short passes, I think Tottenham had 2 all game that were key short passes. Everything else was hit long, whereas Palace had, I think, about 12. You know, so it just does, the statistics don't back it up. But as you say, that's Mourinho all over. You know, he's looking for excuses, he's looking for reasons, he's, you know, he's obviously annoyed at his own team for not doing the right things. But if you take that on face value, which is always a risk against Mourinho, but if you take it on face value and he's saying that his team should have been prepared for Palace to hit it long and hope, and they didn't follow his instructions, well, that's because Palace didn't hit it long and hope. So you got it wrong, Jose. You got it wrong, and your team suffered the consequences. But what really, I think, happened is his team attempted to shithouse the entire game, didn't they, once they got 1-0 up. And that played right into our hands because we were much more confident than we'd been in a long, long time. And we had a system that was really working well. And as you say, that increased balance attacking left, centre and right-hand side, where we dominate down the left usually. The fact that we had a bit more balance about us, I think that is the biggest success from that match, because it just shows you that there's more about this team than just kick it to Wilf and hope we get something now. And that is what we've all been crying out for such a long time. So, brilliant stuff. Ebo got in touch and said, after the last couple of matches, Are we finally getting the hang of having a bit more than 25 to 30% possession? And look, I'll be honest, I'm not going to, but this is a topic I could go on and on about because I think it's a really interesting, probably mainly just to me, but an interesting point of some, you know, something that's happening in the modern game. You get quite a lot of teams now who are almost better without the ball than with it at times. They want their opposition to come and attack them so they can hit them on the counter with really well-structured, pacey, direct, quality attacks. And obviously, if you watch the North London derby in Spurs' previous game, exactly what they did to Arsenal. They said, here you go, Arsenal, you want all the ball, so have all the ball. We're too good for you to break us down because you're useless at the moment. And we're going to hit you horribly on the counter-attack twice and win the game. And that's exactly what they did. And they turned up trying to do that to us. But of course, we quite like that at times as well. You know, Roy's all about making good use of the possession that you have. And sometimes it's to our detriment and sometimes it's to our benefit. But I think Igbo's right in a lot of ways. I think that once the team's playing with that little bit more confidence, we're actually much happier having that little bit more of the ball. And we also showed that whilst Roy's right, there's the only value in possession is good possession. But I think we showed that we can probably enjoy having a bit more of the ball and are capable of keeping the quality level up when we do. But that's not always been the case in the past. It's been our undoing before. So definitely 100% agree with Igbo. That's a bit of progression from the team. And I think part of that comes from the man that Andy Hode and Matt contacted us about and that was analysed very well on Match of the Day as well. And that is the inclusion of Eberechi Eze, of course.
Yeah, I just want to go back to the possession quickly. Got to remember, we haven't kept a clean sheet since, I think, the first day of the season. So the sitting back and soaking up pressure wasn't working in the way that it has worked for Roy in the past. So there's naturally going to be more of possession unless he wants to carry on taking that gamble, which, you know, tentatively, I'm thinking perhaps he's less sure of than he was before, which is only a good thing.
So obviously, we did want to talk about Eberechi Eze, and I said it there, but it was Alex Scott on Match of the Day 2, to be precise. He did some really good analysis of the Palace match. But she talked, as a lot of people have been doing lately, about the difference that Eze makes. Now, a lot of the focus has been on the difference it makes to Zaha to kind of free him up. And of course, that's true. But it's to me, it's much, much more than that, right? Because first and foremost, you know, they're not a like-for-like player. The way Wilf plays out wide left is not the way Eze plays wide left, partly because it's a different role he's being asked to play than Wilf is when he's out there. But I think mainly because they are very, very different types of player, which doesn't really get appreciated. There's a kind of lazy attitude that they're very similar because they've, you know, grown up in the same backgrounds. They're you know, they're what people like to determine street footballers. And they're, you know, they're about sort of expressing themselves and skill and all this kind of stuff. But Eze is so much more of a kind of measured player. And you only have to look at the stats on him, on his passing. He makes more passes than anybody else. I think I remember seeing a stat from the game that he played more key passes in that match than the entire Tottenham front line together. By front line, obviously, I mean the attacking wide players as well as Kane and Son. So, I mean, that in itself tells you everything you need to know about how important he's become and how much he's grown into this Palace side so quickly. And he had spells where he wasn't massively involved. It wasn't a standout performance like we saw against West Brom and Leeds, for example. But it sort of showed to me a little bit of a growing maturity, that he was able to kind of take a step back occasionally, move the ball around intelligently. But it's the directness, the change of pace and just the vision as well. And I suppose, Mike, the one that stands out for me was the sort of swept pass from the left-hand side into the path of Zaha, who ended up shooting over the top of the goal from what was actually probably a better chance than I appreciated at the time. But just the two of them seem to link up really instinctively, which is so pleasing to see.
Yeah, I think the one you're talking about where Zaha skied it, the difference is before we'd have played a ball from the side to Zaha, and he would have had to weave his way around whatever he could in the box and hopefully, you know, score a goal like he did against West Ham in the 97th minute a few years ago. But now you've got somebody feeding from the left, Eze in the middle to Fred, a more telling ball free to Zaha. And that's the kind of thing you get from that situation, which we haven't had for a long time, if ever.
Indeed. Well, before we have a quick sponsor break, we've got to talk about a certain post-match comment that you hinted at earlier on. So let's hear from some midfielder guy from Spurs.
When you are number one in the league, I think every team that you play against, every individual that you play against, for them it's the game of the year, it's the game of the moment. And again, it's credit for us, to us, and it's something we have to deal with. And of course, the players that we play against are top motivated to show their best side, because they are playing against, before the game today, the number one in the league. And yeah, credit to the goalkeeper, credit to us.
So first of all, I mean, where to start? So he called it, was it game of the season, game of the moment? I mean, every game is a game of the moment, isn't it? You only play one game at a time. So, yeah, not too sure about that. So, first of all, I had to look up why he wasn't called Højvæd, because that apparently is a 37-year-old Dutch centre-back who used to play for Southampton. And he's a 25-year-old Danish midfielder who plays for Spurs. I'm being slightly facetious, but really, you know, who is this guy to talk about like that? He's a bang-average midfielder. I just don't see where you get that level of arrogance. I suppose it must come from the manager. But do you know what? He strikes me as he's that guy, you know, like a mate of yours who you sort of meet up with, and he says, I had to chuck the missus, mate. I had enough. I just want my freedom. I want a bit of freedom. I want to play the field a little bit. And then 10 minutes later, after a flipping pint of Foster's or whatever, he's crying, saying, I just want her back. You know, he just went and cried his little eyes out after that. I mean, to me, they're just really spiteful, unnecessary comments to have that level of arrogance. Oh, I don't know, Mike. What do you think?
There's a bit of me, when I first heard it, that thought maybe this is a translation issue. But then I thought about it and I thought, no, it's not, because he would say, there's no ambiguity about what he said. It is pure unadulterated arrogance. And considering there's been about seven sides that have been top of the league this season, and Spurs have only been top of the league on goal difference for a week. It's a very odd comment. And I'm sure it's going to wind up the Palace players, and whoever's playing them next are going to use it to their advantage as well. Bang average is definitely the word, because I don't remember him doing anything. Their number three had an excellent game down the left-hand side, but he wasn't exactly the focus of their chances.
No, and I have to say, as a follically challenged man, that coma over is fooling nobody, mate. Just accept it. Shave it all off. It's over. All right? Just give it up. But it was good to pick that out, because it was a slightly baffling moment. Anyway, it's sponsor time. You did that right at the 4 second mark, where I was pausing for 4 seconds, counting in my head, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you did a little fanfare, didn't you? You can help yourself. That's the performer in you. You know, you don't like the silence, do you?
Carry on. Sorry.
Thanks. Mikey's going to keep that in, and rightly so.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Funtime videos, choose your matchday squad, post-match ratings, and much more. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
So our sponsor is, of course, Pitch Sport DMM. So Pitch Sport enable us to do all sorts of stuff with the statistics they get from your submissions. So please join us on there. If you just Google Pitch Sport Football, you'll find a link to download their app. You get to rate the players, you get to rate the manager, give your predictions, pick your team. All the information that you share goes into a lovely big pot, and they produce some really good statistics. Check them out at Pitch Footy on Twitter to see the kind of content that they're creating. Some really cruel ratings that they come up with this time around. And again, it's not them coming up with it. It's us as fans submitting it. So please get your views across to change this sort of business, because first and foremost, we only gave the manager an average of 6 out of 10 for the game. Even I scored him a good 9 out of 10. In fact, I think I gave him 4.5 out of 5 stars. That is 9 out of 10. Well done, Chris. Good maths. So absolutely needs sorting out there. But somehow, Kevin Friend was given 6 out of 10 for his refereeing performance.
Yeah, I'm not sure about this.
Kevin Friend has signed up on multiple accounts for Pitch Sport Football and is rating himself. He must have rated probably himself around 50 to 100 times as 5 out of 5 stars. Otherwise, there is no way that statistic could have happened.
Yeah, I'm stunned. For the team to get 6 out of 10, the manager to get 6 out of 10, and the referee to get 6 out of 10, unless there was a lot of Spurs fans purporting to be Palace fans.
Well, guys, help us out. Join us on Pitch Sport. Get involved. My code on there is KUGKUT. You can add me in the mates section and compete against me to predict results, which I've not been doing very well with at all. But join us on there. Let's get those statistics giving a proper reflection of what Real Palace supporters think. And that will be hugely appreciated.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So, Mike, it is listener feedback time, and I'm going to take a little bit of a backseat and defer to you on this without telling you until this moment now.
Okay, well, I'll run some thoughts past you from very sage, intelligent people around the place that have got hold of us, and you can give your thoughts back. So, Selhurst John, a good Palace performance we all enjoyed. Is this a false dawn or can we push on? I'm not sure we can answer that, but I'll throw it your way.
It's the ultimate question, isn't it? We've experienced moments of joy in the past that have not necessarily been sustained. But I think the signs are good. That's what I'll say to John on that one. And the signs are very good that the team has started to properly understand this system that we changed to. And let's not forget, we changed it for the start of the season. We had a little bit of pre-season to get used to it, but the personnel has chopped and changed for a variety of reasons. With certain people in that team, it hasn't worked perfectly. But we seem to have found that right formula now, with Christian Benteke leading the line, doing all the really hard work of giving the defenders hell, creating space for other people. And let's not forget, a real goal threat against West Brom as well. So with that attacking three that's now become a four, I think we've got a real chance of sustaining it. And I really hope so, because I don't want to be back on this show moaning about Roy every week.
You wait till they all come down with COVID and we're playing Scott down up front on Wednesday. Daniel J. Edwards on Facebook. Yes, people do still contact us on Facebook. How about the fact that we break teams down without playing on the counter? And if Roy had the balls to play football against Brighton, Burnley and Newcastle, perhaps we'd be in the top six now. Do you think that Roy holds this team back and would be a better manager? Would a better manager get more out of the squad? Let's leave that last bit. But so Brighton, Burnley and Newcastle, has our negativity come back to bite us in the arse?
I that's definitely my thought at the time, certainly. And I don't think the evidence of the most recent performances dispels that in any way. If anything, it kind of reinforces that message. But of course, football isn't quite that simple. It never is. And, especially when we're being emotional about things, we like to think it is that simple. But I certainly do believe we should have played much more on the front foot against Burnley, because I don't think it would have cost us. I think the Newcastle game, we weren't truly terrible, but we certainly weren't great, and we got really badly caught out. And if anything, we were caught out worse when we finally did try and attack. And my problem with that was not doing that from the off. But so I think there's a lot of truth in what Daniel's saying, in the sense that we could have done better. But I think it's also important, and we can do well reminding ourselves of this every now and then, that in terms of the Premier League starts, I think before the game, it was our best ever Premier League start in terms of a points total. And I'm not sure whether that's changed by the fact we drew against Spurs or not. But, we're looking back up the table again, very, we were worried very much after those two poor results. But we're now looking back at the table. So let's try and stay as positive as we can, because we don't know how long it's going to last. But yes, absolutely. If we'd done what we should have done against Burnley and Newcastle in particular, and arguably Brighton, yes, we would be in the top six now. But would that be a false position? Probably.
Yeah, we've been there before. Mr. Cadbury's Parrot, great to hear from you, Mr. Cadbury's Parrot. Also, kudos for the fact that there's now Bourneville Cadbury's Fingers on sale in the shops. So excellent. The quick responses by our defence to clear the ball after Guaita saves was impressive, don't you think? Yes, I mean, for a start, Guaita had a knack, or has a knack, of managing to parry the ball into our players, which has probably got a lot more skill to it than it looks for us, us lay people. But, you know, Klein was quick to clear one that he parried down. Kouyaté another. Yeah, they deserve plenty of kudos for that, don't they?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. I mean, you know, you've got to be switched on, and we were switched on all game. You know, we have seen in the past our defence be a little bit sluggish at times, and I think that's been a feature in recent weeks, but very much not the case against Spurs. And if we can maintain that level of focus and you know, dig out, you know, basically not concede from that kind of second ball when Guaita has made a great save, then brilliant. But you're absolutely right to say it, Mike. He does push the ball into the right area more often than not too.
Yeah, and supposedly the best goalkeeper in the league. He didn't do that. That's why we scored a goal. Jerry Ford, Kevin, in brackets, is not our, close brackets, friend. yes, he was a tit.
Yeah, he was. And the fact that, you know, it ended up being a good performance and you know, what felt like a very good result, although arguably we could have won it, you know, kind of just took the little bit of the frustration away from that. And also the fact that I thoroughly enjoyed giving him abuse was also part of it as well. And I had missed that, but it was not a good refereeing performance. I think even Roy, in his post-match comments, hinted at the fact that he felt that Spurs got a lot more free kicks than we did in similar situations. He was quite diplomatic about it. I would go further and say it was out and out bias. You know, the constant little arm around the shoulder and chats with Harry Kane were incredibly annoying. I know he's their skipper, and you know, the ref and the skippers are supposed to talk a lot, but it, you know, it looked like he was trying to be his best friend. So I'm not really too impressed with that. But And I think probably the moment that got me the most was, yeah, he got some dog's abuse. And I quite like the fact that he smiled as he walked off the pitch when he was really getting it. But the fact that he was lined up chatting and laughing with the Spurs players whilst the Palace players were back out on the pitch, I don't really understand why that was. Because, you know, get out on the pitch, mate. It's, you know, there's no reason for you to be there. So it kind of felt like he'd forgotten himself a little bit and thought he was in the Spurs team and was going to come out with them. But yeah.
There you go. I think a special mention to the linesman at the Homestead end in the second half as well, who was absolutely rubbish. Quinton Soldan, where exactly is Max? ? Well, I think we've covered that, then we don't know, I'm afraid, Quentin. Leaving that aside, I think the Spurs game was our best performance of the season. I was so impressed how we kept coming forward in the second half, but without risking all at the back. I think that's probably a key point. Some very imaginative play, but still need to whip in more crosses for Big Ben.
Yeah, I'll go along with that in terms of how impressed I was at the end of the game. I'm not sure how much of that was because, you know, because we were there and it just felt that much more. Obviously, the Leeds performance was excellent as well. As well as the early performance against Man United. But other than that, you know, let's face it, we've not been particularly consistent and we've had some really poor games as well. But, you know, there's zero doubt that it is very impressive. Absolutely getting some more crosses in for Benteke. But we've shown that we can do that. Eze can put a fantastic ball in the box from the left-hand side and Schlupp, hopefully, will start doing a bit more of that from the right while he's in for Townsend. And if he can start getting more service into the box, then it'll be better for Benteke because he'll have more scoring opportunities. I think, you know, in this system, we almost don't need him to score regularly, but it would be nice to see him do so to keep that confidence up.
Yeah, and uncharacteristically insightful comment from Nick of this parish, so I've stuck him in. He wanted to discuss the Spurs Donny on Match of the Day, who totally misrepresented how we played. I hope we've done that for you, Nick. I think we probably have. And then he said, also nice chat between Vicente and Joe Hart as they walked off. Seems they're discussing how Kane managed to get swerve on his shot for the goal. And a couple of people then said, yeah, no, they did see the conversation sort of worked out that they were both talking about the skill on the shot. So there you go.
Yeah, I saw that. Really, really enjoyed it as well, because obviously it started with the fact that Joe Hart sought out Guaita to, you know, to congratulate him on the saves that he made, in particular the one at the end, because, you know, keepers, you know, they're all nuts and they're all friends, basically. But I just thought that was a really nice moment, and I think Guaita appreciated it as well. And he was very excitable again for his post-match interview, which I've started to be able to handle now. I used to couldn't watch him. It was almost, I don't think cringe is the word, but like, because it's not, I'm not embarrassed for Guaita, but I love his enthusiasm, but you know, his limited use of English, I struggle with it a little bit. But that's not a criticism in any way. But I really, really enjoyed his post-match interview. That's all I'm going to say. No matter, he just seems like such a lovely guy, and just loves being at Palace. And I'm sure he'll be here for many more years.
I love the way he rolls his R's.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, Joe Hart's probably should stop being the face of Head and Shoulders. So Guaita has some fine hair. Maybe he should take over. And let's finish with Tony at If So So What. Are we a couple of signings short of a European tour? If so, who? The fact he's put If So Who suggests that he genuinely thinks that, and it's not tongue in cheek. So let's say Mane and Ronaldo.
Right. Couple of things. Don't mention the E word, because every time we do, we go on a losing run and start talking about the R word. All right. So that's warning number one. And warning number two is don't get so carried away. Having said that, I'm going to say is that we're probably more than a couple of signings short of that kind of level. Let's face it. Partly because we've got to replace some people in the squad for a variety of reasons. But I think personally, I think we're a really talented, I mean, although Schlupp might be changing this, but I think we're a very talented right-sided forward away from a more mobile central midfielder away from having an exceptional squad that we should be expecting, you know, top half as a minimum. That's how I feel right now. But so much depends on hanging on to Zaha still, unfortunately.
Yeah, and there's plenty of very good teams in the Premier League this season. That's why I think we're only 7 points or 8 points off the top, but still in the bottom half.
Indeed. So let's wrap this up with a quick look ahead to West Ham. Obviously, there'll be no preview show for the West Ham game because it comes along so quickly on Wednesday night as we record this. Well, it's Wednesday night whenever we recorded this, quite frankly, but whenever you listen to it. I'm going to talk myself into circles there, so I'm just going to back away from that explanation and get straight on with talking about West Ham. And first and foremost, for a proper West Ham preview, do go to our YouTube channel. Just search Back of the Nest on YouTube. DR has carried out a full preview with a West Ham supporter, giving you his own pearls of wisdom as well, if you're missing him on the show today. So do check that out. And whilst you're there, obviously like and subscribe as well. But Mike, you and I can talk a little bit about what do we expect. So I suppose the big question, the only major question for us right now is, given how quickly the game's coming around, do we think we can realistically put out the same team? Roy talks after the game about that fatigue would be an issue, that he doesn't want to change too much, but he very, you know, credit to him for saying it. He said we got to learn lessons from what we did on Project Restart, where we played the same people every week. He did that. So yeah, he's okay. But you know, he's now said, I have a squad that enables me to do that. So are you expecting it? Do we need to do it? And if so, what would you like to see change?
So, I mean, first of all, it depends whether he wants to do it for West Ham or sort of think, well, Liverpool's a free hit. Maybe play the better players against West Ham and a slightly more second string against Liverpool, but then you don't want the second string to be humiliated by them. Yeah, it's a tough one. I think he's right. There's two players on the right and left backs, plenty of choices for centre backs. midfield, you know, he's moved around between three before, and let's be honest, Jimmy Mack's like a Duracell bunny, so he could probably play him every day, and he wouldn't give less than 110%. So it's just the front players really, and I feel like it's still fragile, and one tinker here and there could be enough for it to go back to meaningless possession. So it's a worry, but it's the same issue that other teams have got, and you know, Liverpool are beset with injuries, and West Ham don't have a stronger team as a deeper team as they have in you know years gone by. So it'd be hard to say that Eze or Zaha.
Yeah. So the only thing that I think I would possibly look at, you'd mentioned MacArthur, you know, and his energy. You could probably play him every week, and maybe you could. But for me, you know, it's just getting. What is he, 33 now, I think. So if there was a change to be made, and I'm not saying we make it, but logically to me, Gyro would come in for Maka. Because I think Luka's actually, to me, he looked almost back to his best. I thought he was really good against West Brom, particularly doing the screening job, 11v11. He was doing a pretty impressive job. But he looked really, really confident against Spurs. So I would keep him where he is and look at potentially Gyro. Whether or not, you would have talked to me, you know, last couple of weeks, I'd have said PVA out, Mitchell back in. It's a no-brainer, but I thought PVA was excellent against Spurs, so I wouldn't change that. I think there's value in keeping the centre-backs together, even though there's an embarrassment of riches there to a certain degree. So it's really difficult to know what to change, if anything, you know. Klein is getting better with every game, but whether or not match fitness wise, with the amount of time he was out, it might be a time to give Wardy a game. I'm not sure, but I just really want to beat West Ham. So you know, whatever the best possible scenario is, and if that's keeping all the same 11 on the pitch and just chucking them back out there, then let's do that. But going back to your point on Liverpool, Mike, yeah. I think Liverpool are there for the taking because they are really struggling at the back. With injuries, and they weren't great going forward as well. They've just lost that little bit of fluidity with their kind of formerly formidable front three. You know, Salah's still scoring, but you know, Mane just seems a little bit off at the moment, and he usually gives us hell. Firmino's not getting a great number of goals and hasn't done for a while. So they're just having to chop and change that much. So I honestly think that we could just get another moment against them. And I love those moments too. So, but I'm just going to be greedy and say, let's win both games and pick the same team twice in a week. And I hope for the best, really.
Well, it's a congested December, but it's not huge. There's as many games in January as there are in December. Every team's going to have this issue, especially the ones that have had a couple of games postponed. I really wouldn't want to lose to West Ham. That would suck.
No, absolutely right. And look, they've been given it a little bit because they were frustrated to lose out on Eze, and quite rightly so, because he's better than all of their team put together. But they've been trying to lord it up with Benrahma and Jared Bowen, who are obviously two that we were linked with, and they chose to go to West Ham, or we chose to pull out of the deal, depending on what you read / know / hear. They're getting very, very confident. And I suppose rightly so. But they should feel that little bit of shame. And I suppose they might point the direction in our way similarly. But they gave Moyes hell for working with what was an underperforming weak squad. And they criticised the kind of work that the board were doing in the transfer window. But they've spent a hell of a lot of money. And he actually got what he asked for finally. And they've given him a decent squad. And he's turned it around after a really poor start. And I hate to see it, but I'm not someone who hates David Moyes. I hate West Ham, but I think he's a manager who's got an unfair amount of stick for going into Man United at a time where they were so player driven, and you know, he had just had a thankless task. I think his reputation took an unfair hit, and they're reaping the rewards for having a really strong manager now. But
well, look, West Ham always hold themselves in such high esteem. So again, I heard today Tony Cotty saying, that it's set up for them this year to be in Europe. Going back to Tony's point about Palace, if you put that kind of stress on yourselves when your team, you know, would only do that by overachieving, it's very easy for the fans to then get down when it doesn't work out. West Ham are a mid-table side and we're battling out similar places in the league as us. And, you know, they've made some poor decisions in the past. They bought Jordan Hugill. You know, they're not a world-beating side. So it's just worse whenever we don't get at least a point against them, because they will just lord it over and carry on saying that they're the second coming of Christ.
They do say that. Tactically, it's obviously a very different game to the Spurs game. However, it's playing a team that are in good form and full of confidence, just as Spurs were. And it's a team that you can get in behind and you can give trouble. They should be fearing our front four as much as we worry about any of their form. So for me, I just think it's going to be a very, very similar affair to the Spurs game. So we need to match that level. And I think we can, and I'm quite confident for once. I do worry a little bit about the kind of effect of players that may or may not have joined us and how they tend to do well against us, you know. So I do worry a little bit about whether Benrahma gets a game, and certainly worry a little bit about Bowen, because he's a tremendous footballer, and very frustrated that they ended up getting him. But we've got some tremendous footballers ourselves, so... In terms of picking out some predictions, I'm going to ask you to go first. What do you think?
I'm going to go for a draw, 2 apiece.
I'm going to go for a 1-0 Palace win with substitute Jordan Ayew scoring in the 93rd minute.
Excellent. I'd love that. I'd love it.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you very much indeed for everybody for listening, and all of those of you who got in touch as well. We read everything that you send in, and I can only use a selection every week, but it all helps tremendously. Check us out on all our social media and our YouTube channel. And until next time, come on, you Palace!
Back of the Nest Review Show, sponsored by PitchDMM.com.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.